On the Empire Podcast this week, we learn more about the true history of the Kelly Gang with the true history of the Kelly Gang's director, Justin Kurzel. All that and the usual news and nonsense on the movie podcast that, quite frankly, right now, stinks of food. Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to the Empire Podcast. This week, I'm joined by two colleagues of such lethal cunning. Helen O'Hara, our geek queen, is here.
Hello.
How are you, Helen?
I am well, thank you.
Good, good, good. Did you bring food into the studio this week, Helen? Stinking the place out?
I didn't bring food into the studio. In fact, I haven't eaten enough all day, I wouldn't have brought
food. I'd pass out halfway through the podcast. That could be bad.
That's amazing.
I didn't bring any food into the studio today, stinking the place out.
Who did bring food into the studio today?
Who brought food into the studio, stinking the place? Hey, it's Amon Warman. How are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm well fed.
Wow. Okay. Shall we set the scene for the listeners at home? What's happened? What have you done?
So
why does this studio, this beautiful pristine studio, this grey box of depression, why does it smell of what is it? What am I smelling right now?
So let me set the scene. There's a reason behind
this. Turn the lights down.
Let me set the mood.
Ooh, yeah. Ooh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. What's wrong with these people?
So, on my way in to the Empire offices earlier today.
No, please stop.
Oh, sorry.
I asked myself, do I have time to knit to Leicester Square?
These are the big questions, aren't they?
Yeah. My favorite Chinese shop in Leicester Square and get some food because I'm very hungry and get to Camden in time to do the Empire podcast.
And the answer is yes.
My mind was telling me no. My belly was saying a different story. I listened to my belly. And now we're here.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. I look forward to the emails of complaint tomorrow. Subject heading Empire Podcast Strange Smell. It smells very nice. It's very nice. Was it nice? Was it good?
It is very nice. It is very good. I still have a little bit left. I'm going to eat it after we have done this.
Oh, that's fine. Just taunt us with your food. I have eaten, but I still have more food, says
Amon. I did offer Chris.
You offered Chris food, did you?
I don't know.
I see.
I turned it down because I didn't want to be complicit in this, but also I wanted to just remain pure. My body, as you know, Helen, is a temple.
Yeah, one of those ones in the jungle that's really overgrown and kind of tumbling down.
Come on. If that means that The Rock, Jack Black, Kevin Hart, and Karen Gillan will explore it once every 2 years. Hang on, wait, that doesn't work. That's gone weird.
Wow.
Oh, my word.
But
where did that come from?
Lara Croft is welcome anytime, right?
Lara Croft is welcome to explore my temple. No, that's wrong. That's a sort of outdated, outmoded, patriarchal attitude that I would expect of you.
Would you?
But not of the Empire Podcast.
And
I condemn it in the strongest possible terms. So, welcome to the Empire Podcast, everybody. And I just wanted to set the scene in case you were smelling something strange at home. It does smell very nice, of course. But
actually, if you're smelling something strange at home, you might be having some kind of attack, or it could be a gas leak. So please do watch out for yourselves.
It could be burning toast. Do you smell burning toast? I smell burning toast.
I smell almonds.
All right, so one of the reasons I wanted to talk about food, apart from the overwhelming pungent smell in the room right now, is that this week's question comes from a listener, and it comes from a listener via Twitter, and it was sent in last week, and I liked it so much I liked it on Twitter, which is very rare for me. I don't like many tweets on the old Twitter. I like them, I appreciate them at the time, but I don't actually press the like button. It's just a weird thing I have. It's just one of those things. Anyway, the question comes from Jody Everett, at Jody Everett, and it is very, very simple. Avengers as biscuits. Go.
Okay, so I've given this question far too much thought, but I have.
Whereas I liked it and then immediately forgot about it.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, that's a good one.
I have some options. So.
Okay.
Bucky.
Bucky. We're starting with Bucky.
We're starting with Bucky.
All right.
I'm going to stop you there. He's not an Avenger.
Was he in the final battle against Thanos?
Lots of people were in the final battle against Thanos.
Answer the question, Chris. Was he in the final battle?
I answered the question by saying lots of people were in the final battle against Thanos.
Anyway, we're not going to quibble about Bucky's Avenger status.
I will if I hear the answer.
Oh my God, bring us the answer.
I've gone for Maryland chocolate chip. Now, you see,
he clearly needs something with nuts in it.
Let me break this down. He was a hobnob for the longest time. But once he went to Wakanda and got rehabilitated in Wakanda, that's what the chocolate chip cookies represent.
Represents.
You know what I'm saying?
I still think it should be like, at least if you're going for a Marilyn cookie, it should be the chocolate chip and hazelnut because he's a bit, you know, in the head.
Okay, I can vibe with that. I'm allergic to nuts, so I didn't immediately go to that, but okay, I can see it.
Shouldn't he be some kind of Russian biscuit?
Like what, Chris?
I don't know. I haven't looked it up, but, you know, like a Digestivski.
Like a blini. He should be a blini, you're saying.
Yes, Ellen.
Okay. I mean, not really a biscuit.
As opposed to the one I said.
Okay, Digestivski.
I'm going with chocolate chip from
Next.
Bucky. Vision.
Okay.
Vision.
Should we guess?
Should we make a Kit Kat.
Why should vision be a Kit Kat?
Because it's kind of squarish and a little bit more kind of high-tech looking.
I know what vision should be.
What should vision be?
Vision should be party rings.
Ooh. You're making me doubt my choice here.
What have you got for?
Because of the brightly colored, multicolored stuff.
I like it.
I went for a Mr. Kipling Viennese well.
That's good.
Very specific.
Because, yeah, it's just a classy biscuit. And, you know,
a classy biscuit.
I think it's the sort of thing I can imagine Vision sharing with Wanda after a lovely chicken paprikash lunch in his little cardigan. You know
After she's deep fried his kebab, there they are, enjoying a lovely feeling.
Well, surely
world.
He should be shortbread, given that he's so associated with
Scotland. Shortbread is Captain America.
Shortbread is Captain America. No,
it's to the point. You respect him. You respect it, but you know he's
Captain
simple.
America. Because he's bland. Captain America is a born snickerdoodle. That's right. Ooh. I said.
What the hell is a snickerdoodle?
A snickerdoodle is a fantastic American biscuit. It's a sort of
part snicker, part labradoodle. Is that what it is?
Sure. It's okay. It's kind of like you make a bowl of biscuit dough, so it's kind of a shortbready biscuit dough, and then you roll it in a mixture of cinnamon and sugar. And then when it bakes, it becomes a sugar and cinnamon coated deliciousness. And it's very American, as you can sort of tell by the ridiculous name.
A snickerdoodle.
I think he's a snickerdoodle. And of course, it's the closest word to saying he's a snack. Which also is true.
We can't say that.
And also the sugary, you know, cinnamony sugary coating represents the colours of Cap's beard, which, as we all know, is peak Cap.
But Sharon Carter is not in this pack of biscuits. Should Captain America not be a biscuit that contains within it a hidden cream? So to represent Helen, bear with me. To represent the super soldier serum that courses through his veins, of course, so that when you bite into it, for example.
So you're saying he's an Oreo?
He's an Oreo. You bite into it and out squirts this creamy stuff.
Good Lord.
What?
I think you're doing it wrong. That's all.
Oh,
Chris.
Gosh.
That's what I'm saying. You're saying bland, straight down the middle.
I never said
shortbread.
I like shortbread.
Yeah, shortbread is delicious. Okay, next.
I know exactly what I'm being into the Empire offices next time.
because it doesn't reek. that's mainly it.
Falcon. I said this last week. McVitie's chocolate digestive.
Dark chocolate.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Whereas Black Panther, I'm going full bourbon.
Yeah, I was going to say bourbon for Black Panther as well. Yeah, I was absolutely.
Bourbon forever! E bourbon!
I'll be honest, I'm really ashamed to say I don't know much about African biscuits. Is there a big biscuit scene in African baking? Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know much about it. What I do know, it's not really a biscuit though. I mean, plantain is a... And there's plantain chips, which you can get here, and they
those are amazing. Yeah, those are incredible. Mm.
So it's just definitely the sort of thing I can imagine you can eat, you can find
in
Wakanda.
If this was a question of what snack is each Avenger, then you were saying plantain chips.
Absolutely.
That makes sense to me. Yeah, I will absolutely go with that. Okay.
And that's as far as I got.
Oh, come on. We've got many, many more to go. All right.
To offer suggestions.
Hulk.
When I... Viscount. Hulk initially.
I'm thinking mint Viscount.
I went Jaffa cake.
Jaffa cake.
What? No.
Oh, because of the famous Orange Hulk. Yes, of course.
Jaffa cake. Jaffa cake is not a biscuit, for a start. If you put it in a tin with biscuits.
That's a whole other debate.
No, that's a whole other debate.
Wars have been fought over this.
I know they have. And I'm pinning my colours to the mask.
Do you know, I didn't like Jaffa cakes for the longest time, and now I love them. And that's where that story ends.
Cool. I don't love them. I will take them if there are no other biscuits available, but no.
Right. Okay.
And they're not really biscuits. Anyway, or cakes. They're just this weird middle ground. No, not having them.
Jaffa cake is Hawkeye.
Jaffa cake is Hawkeye. That seems harsh, but I was going to say custard cream for him, and I really don't have a reason for it.
Oh, wait. No. Because Jaffa cakes are Natasha. They got the...
Just because they're redheaded.
No, not just because. Yes, entirely because of the redhead. No, not just because of that. Because they contain
hidden depths. Yeah, okay.
And because no one can quite decide what they are.
That's a good answer.
Are they cake? Are they biscuit? Are they human? Are they dancer? Nobody knows. Are they spy? Are they foe? Are they friend? Are they agent? Who knows?
Who would Tony be? What biscuit is rich? But also philanthropic.
What biscuit is a rich tea for Tony?
A Viennese with the chocolate in the middle. You know, the fingers, not the swirls, but the fingers.
Oh, I know exactly. Yeah,
the ones you get from M&S, they're really nice ones.
Yeah.
I see him being those.
Yeah.
Or some kind of millionaire shortbread kind of biscuits. Because, you know, I don't feel like I need to explain that one too much.
I don't get it. Because of the millionaire thing. Yes, I get that now. Any advances on Tony Stark with the what about Mithoi? Is anyone
Mithoi? Mithoi is not a biscuit.
No, but it's Thor's hammer. Hey, oh Lord!
Ooh, what would Thor be? Okay, this is interesting.
Thor would be a big.
He'd be a
chunky. He'd be a what?
Lebkuchen, because it's from Middle Europe. It's close enough. It's those the ones you get in German biscuits at Christmas, kind of. I'm pretty sure they also have them in Scandinavia. Please correct me if not. Also, please send me some biscuits.
he'd be a wagon wheel, wouldn't he? Be the biggest biscuit you can get.
He would not be a wagon wheel.
You know when sometimes you try and get a wagon wheel into your mouth as a whole, and you can't. Thor would be like that, wouldn't he? As a biscuit, trying to.
Thank you so much.
Trying to cram the biscuit into your mouth.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Powerful. It's a muscular biscuit.
But it's not a very nice biscuit, and I think that should count for something.
All right. Okay. What are your favourite biscuits? That's maybe... We're coming at this from the wrong angle, perhaps.
We are, aren't we? Yeah.
What are your favourite biscuits? And is Twix a biscuit? Yes, it is.
I do like myself a jammy dodger.
I mean, it's classic.
It's a classic.
I like those jammy dodgers that have the cream in them as well.
Nah,
I think they're better.
No, keep it simple.
The happy faces, I think they're called. Happy faces.
I like, I'm not sure if it's technically a biscuit, but the chocolate fingers. Those are really nice.
Those can be good, yeah. But the problem is when you get some of those and then suddenly the entire packet is empty and you're like, I don't know what happened. I just had like maybe two maximum.
Yeah, no, you can wolf them down very quickly.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of a custard cream.
Love a custard cream.
Yeah, I'm a very big fan of a really good chocolate chip cookie, but I'm quite fussy about my chocolate chip cookies. Mm-hmm. And I like this is a bit more particular, Oreos do a cinnamon bun Oreo. And it's super
good.
Do
they?
Yeah.
Okay. That's exciting.
That's
very exciting.
Very good.
Custard creams, I'm going to say, as Wanda.
Wanda. Do you not think she'd be something a bit odder?
Do you think?
Yeah, more
like one of the, what do you call those fruit ones? Garibald?
Fruit shortcake?
Fruit shortcake? Fruit shortcake.
Doesn't
very reductive. By the way, she struggles with certain aspects of her personality, but calling her a fruit shortcake is a bit much. All right, yeah, I'll accept that. You know those things where you get the biscuits and they have the pastry, the wafer thin pastry that has the chocolate on the end. So it's got that.
Oh, like a, okay.
Yeah. Not
those,
that.
Like cat's tongues, but not quite.
Last one, Spider-Man. What would Spider-Man be?
Oh, it'd be something adorable. What's the most adorable biscuit?
Nice.
Nice. He'd be a nice biscuit. That's Steve Rogers, isn't it?
He's no. Nice. He actually should be the happy faces.
Happy faces.
Yeah.
Or the animals.
These should be in animals.
Yes, little animals.
The little animal
cookies. Oh, Doctor Strange. We forgot about Doctor Strange. He'd be a whirl, wouldn't he? Of some kind
he
of.
He would be a whirl of some kind.
Thanos, what would he be? nothing because he's dead. Fuck him.
He'd be a bloody, he'd be like something that isn't even a biscuit that people say they want when you offer them biscuits. They're like, he'd be like a cheese cracker or something.
One of those. Yeah. A garlic and parmesan twist.
Actually, that sounds delicious.
It is very, very nice. Very, very nice. And hopefully I'll be getting my Nectar Point renewal through while the podcast is on, and I can tell you whether I've got a deal on that.
How exciting for all of us.
Keep them peeled. Keep listening to the show, because we may be going through my Nectar Point offers live on the show. Who knows what may happen. But if you want to have your question read out on the Emperor podcast and treat it with the respect it deserves, as Jody Everett found out to their cost. just read here, South African cookies, condensed milk cookies. I just googled African biscuits.
Immediately on board for those, yeah.
Yeah, they're buttermilk rusk biscuits crunchies.
Rusk biscuits.
Yeah, interesting. Imbatata, Malawian sweet potato cookies.
And there are no, hang on. Thor is technically Australian. I mean, Chris Hemsworth is. So it's a chance to get Tim Tams in there.
Tim Tams!
Tim Tams!
Tim Tams!
That's a good shout.
That's amazing. Yeah. Next week we'll do which Batman villains are biscuits. What's the Penguin? I don't know. Nothing really springs to mind. Anyway, if you do want to have your question read out in the Empire podcast, you can get in touch with us via a number of methods. We're on Twitter as @EmpireMagazine. You can use the hashtag Empire podcast. You can slide into my DMs. They're generally open. No weirdos, please. Or you can just wait for me to throw out a panicked request for questions 5 minutes before the podcast starts, which is usually what happens, and then just reply as Jody did last week.
Indeed.
You can get in touch with us on Facebook, although we don't really recommend that, and you can get in touch with us on email as well, podcast@empireonline.com, which is usually where people send in the most considered questions, or the longest. Not necessarily the same thing, but do send in questions and we will tackle them on next week's show and beyond. Next week's show, of course, is an in-studio special. March 6th, we're going to be in Dublin.
What?
Ooh. At the Dublin International Film Festival. It's going to be a lot of fun. Tickets for that are sold out.
Oh, well.
I am told. But if you do want to come and see us in Dublin, we will be doing a meet and greet afterwards as well. I believe I'll find out where we're going to be. I will let you know. And of course, tickets may become available near the time returns and whatnot. So keep them peeled for that.
Cool.
And whilst we're also on the subject of plugging and shameless plugging and whatnot, I should also mention that, as you know, the Empire Spoiler Specials are now behind a paywall. And if you want to listen to, I mean, we put up loads since we went behind the paywall. We told people we'd be giving a minimum of 2 a month. We have met that, and we have exceeded that target.
Ooh.
In just the last couple of weeks. 1917 with Sam Mendes and Christy Wilson-Cairns. Queen and Slim with director Melina Matsoukas and writer Lena Waithe. Interviewed by this man, Amon Warman. Did you bring takeaway there as well? Did you, you know, did you withhold that from them and just wave it under their noses and go, smell this?
Delicious.
Not on that occasion.
Yeah. You're professional when you're with them, but not with us. Okay, that's fine. It's all going on my ledger. I'm on this. It's all going.
Wow. There's a bit of a ledger.
He's like Taylor Swift up in here.
There's a bit of red in your ledger, my friend. Oh my God. But I maybe just sauce for your takeaway. Who knows? What else have we done? We've done the Parasite Spoiler Special as well, and this week it's just gone up. It are Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn special, in which the three of us talk about that film. I also talked to the director, Kathy Yan, as well. And if you want to subscribe to the Empire Spoiler Specials, it will be no more than £4.99 a month. And you can do so by going to glow.fm/Empire Film. Fill in your payment details. You can subscribe monthly or annually as well. And then they will send you a link. You can put that into your podcast app of choice, and then you have access to all the new spoiler specials we're going to be producing as well, and the whole archive going all the way back to 2012.
Wow.
Exciting. Amazing. Stuff. Exciting stuff. Anyway, that's the shameless plugs over.
For now.
Or is it? Because we might as well. We're going to talk about the movie news, and sometimes we finish the movie news section on a special day like today when it is New Empire Day.
New Empire Day.
And we talk about what's in the new issue of Empire Magazine, which is now on sale on all good and evil news agents. But since we're here and since we're plugging our wares, let's do it now.
Hurrah. So, the new issue of Empire is out, and it has The Mandalorian.
Mando.
The what?
And The Child.
What?
I know.
What is this?
It is a baby-looking Yoda, is what it is.
That's so darn cute. Yes, indeed. So The Mandalorian is about to hit these shores. Much ballyhooed Star Wars TV show created by Jon Favreau. Starring Pedro Pascal, Carl Weathers, Gina Carano, directed by people like Deborah Chow and Taika Waititi and Dave Filoni and Rick Famuyiwa, and it's all these incredible people working on the show. It, of course, debuted in the States last year. It's taken a while to come over here as well, but that has given us time to soak up the fact that it's become a cultural phenomenon, one character in particular, of course. Mm-hmm. And I wrote this piece, I spoke to Jon Favreau, Taika Waititi, Pedro Pascal, loads of people about the show and about the impact of the show and about what people can expect. And I know that some of you naughty people listening to this are probably snuck in under the wire and watched The Mandalorian already.
What? Who would do that?
You're very naughty. You're very, very naughty. And don't do that. But for the rest of you, a treat is in store. Wait. And in fact, for people who've seen it, there's a treat in store anyway, because it's written by me. You goddamn wow. Motherfuckers. So appreciate me in my lifetime, because one day I won't be here and you'll be like, where did he go? We liked him.
Where did that humble Chris Hewitt go?
Mm. Humble. Humility, I'm on, is just one of my traits. Many wonderful traits. What else is in the issue, Helen? You're looking at it right now.
I'm looking at it right now, so you can't. We also have, obviously, the usual movie news, reviews, etc. We are looking at the future of Star Wars off the back of The Mandalorian. We have features on Mulan, Nicolas Cage, Emerald Fennell with her fantastic new film, Promising Young Woman. We look back at The Lost Boys with Joel Schumacher. We've got a look at Rocks, which is a freaking amazing British film.
I keep hearing so many amazing things. I need to see it.
So good. St. Maud as well, another fantastic British film. Mm-hmm. And we've got the review of Portrait of a Lady on Fire, which you should be super excited about if you're not already. Dark Waters, a Mark Ruffalo film that we talked to Todd Haynes about recently. Mm-hmm. In looking ahead, we've got Bill and Ted Facing the Music.
You do, yes.
Come on.
It's all very exciting.
Great stuff. Jeff Goldblum's in there.
Yes.
Charlie Hunnam answers The Pint of Milk.
Oh.
What a day. What a glorious day.
Well, what an issue of Empire this is. And some stuff happens in the back section as well, which
it does,
I edit
yeah.
to, but I can't remember what it is, but I'm sure it's good.
Roma's joining the
Roma,
Criterion
we speak
collection.
To Alfonso Cuarón. Thank you. I've yep. forgotten about that.
Animals is in there.
Oh, is it? That's
it
good.
Is?
Wow, that's
yeah.
exciting. There's loads of stuff in there as well. And we also have a supplement. We have a supplement this week, this month, this year, whatever the hell it is. It is the ultimate celebration of Bond. Which is a big old 56-page celebration of all things Bond. We have new interviews, new photographs from the archives, and incredible behind-the-scenes stories as well. It's very, very exciting. What a package. What a package.
I've got to say, I'm really looking forward to that Roma piece, because there's been an interesting discussion in the wake of Parasite's win about how much Roma opened the door for that last year. Mm. It'll be very interesting to see what might have gone down had it won at a Green Book last year, this year. But it's a really good movie. I'm looking forward to reading that piece.
Yeah, and of course it's now coming out on the Criterion Collection. And that's interesting, because it's a Netflix film, but now there's been announcements that other Netflix films are going to be going to the Criterion Collection as well. Like The Irishman's going to go to Criterion Collection. Mm-hmm. They announced this week The Parasite isn't obviously a Netflix film over here, but it's is going to be on the Criterion Collection as well. And, you know, maybe that gives it a more of a prestige sheen than just being on Netflix would down
yeah,
the line.
Maybe so.
Maybe so. Anyway, it's available right now. All Good and Evil News Agents. What a package. And we recommend heartily, heartily that you buy it. And as I always say, in the spirit of generosity and love, pay my wages, you absolute motherfuckers.
Chris.
What?
I just don't think a career in marketing is for you.
Buy this magazine or the Hewitt gets it. How about that?
No, that might sell.
That might sell. No, it wouldn't sell. People are like, oh, yeah, let's get rid of that guy. Anyway, so it's on sale right now. We're very, very excited about it. But we're also excited about things that happened in the world of movies this week. Movie news, specifically. Helen, you have a face that tells me that you are plugged into the world of movie news. this week and you know exactly the story you want to start off with?
I do. Yeah, for sure.
Now, if you just give me 5 minutes.
How about the Doc Savage TV series? This is intriguing just because I remember writing stories on this back in the day when I was still on the website full time. And at that point, it was being talked about as a Shane Black film. It's been talked about as Dwayne The Rock Johnson starring as Doc Savage. And now it's going to be completely unconnected, as far as we know, to either of those people, but be turned into a TV show. So Doc Savage was like a big pulp hit character. So he's kind of a bit Tarzan-y, but not quite. Mm-hmm. He's kind of like Tarzan meets Arnold Schwarzenegger's character in Twins, right? So he's been raised from birth by scientists to be the perfect hero. So he's a scientist, an inventor, a doctor, an explorer. He's like super buff. He meets like dinosaurs, he fights villains, he exposes secret societies, he has all these gadgets. He's kind of a bit of everything. Mm-hmm. So I guess if you do a TV show of it, it allows you to explore all these ridiculous things that he's able to do, which could be quite a good fit. But yeah, we'll see. Will this one get out of development hell? Neil Moritz is certainly hoping so. He's the producer behind it.
Where do I know that name from?
You know that name from basically all of the Fast movies ever.
That's the one.
All the really fast ones. And some of the furious ones too. Sure. And, he's a producer of things like that. Movies of that ilk. Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, that's cool.
That's exciting, I guess. I don't know much about Doc Savage. I keep getting confused with Doc Samson from the Hulk comics.
Oh, yeah. Green-haired dude.
Yeah, green-haired dude. Yeah. Played briefly in the MCU by...
Mm-mm. I forget.
Yeah.
Leonard Sampson.
Wait, was that Tim Blake Nelson?
No. He was the leader.
Of course he was.
Luke Ringo?
No. Oh. Ty Burrell.
Oh. Oh, yeah. I'd forgotten.
From Modern Family.
Modern Family. Mm-hmm. He's fantastic.
Yes. I can't see that guy turning into the Doc Sampson of the comics, who's this big, muscular, green haired, rock ponytail rock star guy. But who knows? Ty Burrell's got range. I've got some exciting news that we might be able to discuss.
Please.
More than the Doc Savage news. Dexter Fletcher, who is attaching himself limpet-like to all sorts of projects in the wake of Rocketman's success, Oscar-winning success.
Oh.
Well,
for best original song that isn't Glasgow, No Place Like Home, you mean?
A very specific category, but yeah, I guess. Yes, it did win the Oscar for Best Original Song for Elton John's Unforgettable.
I'm Gonna Love Me Again.
That's it. Yes.
Now I remember
it.
A thing.
Sing it. How's the tune go?
I'm gonna love me again.
Is that where it goes?
Yeah.
Huh.
Is it?
Go. I mean, he could tell us anything and we wouldn't know.
All right. So anyway, yes. Dexter Fletcher, he has been attached since then to Sherlock Holmes 3. He's been attached to a retelling of the Voyage of the Demeter, which is the ship in Dracula that takes Dracula to England.
Is that still going to happen after episode 2 of Dracula this Christmas?
I wonder if that maybe put the kibosh on it.
Yeah, I wonder so.
Who knows? But now he has attached himself once again, limpid-like, to The Saint. Latest remake of The Saint.
I mean, people have been clamoring for a remake of The Saint, haven't they?
Yeah. It's been very hard to find questions for the Empire podcast. You have to wade through all the Saint fan mail first.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, look, it's not a bad like premise for a show.
And what is that premise? Who is The Saint?
He's a spy? A secret agent type? Is he?
He's a do-gooder.
He's a do-gooder?
I don't know if he's a spy necessarily.
And he's a master of disguise?
He can be.
Okay.
So he's...
Val Kilmer did a lot of disguising.
Leslie Charteris, I believe, created him, and he was in many novels and short stories, mm-hmm. and then the small screen played, of course, by...
Roger Moore.
And then played by...
Val Kilmer.
Ian Ogilvy in The Return of the Saint in the 70s. And then by...
Val Kilmer.
In the famously terrible Philip Noyce movie from, what, 1996, 1997, something like that. But a movie I suspect may not actually be that bad if you went back and looked at it now, but maybe I'm wrong. Write in, tell me if I'm wrong. And it's been a while since that, and now Dexter Fletcher is in talks to direct this.
I mean, we love Dexter Fletcher. We think he's great. Mm-hmm. I I'm really struggling for strong feelings about this. I'm really struggling.
It's not been the best week for movie news.
You know what? It's like it could be fun. Yeah. Could be really fun. I don't know that we need another, you know,
hero
character like this.
Oh, okay.
We don't need another. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. You know, it's. Amon, what do you think?
I am a Dexter Fletcher fan, mm-hmm. and therefore I'm here for it.
Aren't you worried that he's getting so busy, he may have to knock the McDonald's adverts on the head? Because I find his voice comforting.
Okay.
Do you not find it like you're watching the McDonald's advert and his voice comes in and goes, "Oh yeah, get McDonald's this
how
week."
How often do you watch McDonald's adverts?
Yeah. Always.
Like I don't really watch terrestrial
TV. Two burgers
TV.
For a pound.
Yeah.
McDonald's, and he goes, "Oh yeah."
I don't really watch terrestrial TV with adverts, you know.
Yeah.
Oh my God, what a snob.
I'm just saying.
Holy shit.
BBC or GTFO.
Oh. So. What's GTFO, is that?
It's what the government is doing with the BBC.
That's what I say. That's what I say to the government whenever they want to destroy the BBC. I say, GTFO, you MFs. I've said motherfucker far too often in this podcast already, so I don't want to do that. But yeah, I'm excited about it. It's going to be good.
At the risk of jinxing it, Tom Holland has said that the Uncharted movie, that movie which we all know is definitely going to get made, mm-hmm. is filming next month.
Okay, I will 100% believe this when I see it in cinema.
Yeah.
Don't wish to doubt saintly little adorable Tom Holland.
Yeah.
But
I really want to see this movie because I'm a fan of the game franchise. I've played all of them. They're really, really good. Even the spin-off. Mm-hmm. Which was solid. And I still remember the Nathan Fillion sort of short online on YouTube, which is really, really fun. So, yeah, if they're finally ready to start making this, then I'm here for that.
I mean, I hope it happens, if only to stop all the speculation about it.
I think there's like, you know, five directors who have come in and signed on and then dropped out.
Who's directing it now? Sorry?
I think it might be Travis Knight.
Yeah, that
Travis
sounds right.
Knight, that sounds right, yeah.
That does sound right.
Who I really like. I was just saying, I rewatched Coop Under Two Strings the other day. That's great. Bumblebee, I think, is really, really good. I think he's done one more film since then, which I can't remember what it's called. But yeah, I'm a big Travis Knight fan. So if he can sort of put his magic on this, then I'm here for it.
I mean, I would just really like to see it made because I feel like I've written about this my entire career. Like, I feel like it's been, you know, again, for the website, we would just be writing stories about, oh, the Uncharted movie is here. It's, no, it's gone, but it's back again. And here is another possible person who might be making it. Like, okay.
It's really, really exciting movie news this week, isn't it? You can tell we're all enthused and energized.
Well, go ahead. I was going to say, Guillermo del Toro... he is making a Pinocchio movie,
mm-hmm.
and yes. Ewan McGregor and Tilda Swinton have joined the cast that already has Ron Perlman and Christoph Waltz.
I mean, that's pretty sexy as a
that's
list.
Pretty cool. Yeah. I mean, Guillermo is one of those, you know, those filmmakers who you can watch the first 10 minutes of a film is like, and you know, immediately know.
And then stop.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you don't have to watch anything else.
No.
Okay, you watch the rest of the film. Okay, okay. Yeah.
So yeah, and it's interesting because I think they're making a live action Pinocchio, and this is going to be a stop motion Pinocchio coming out around the same time. So, it'd be interesting to see those two films go head to head.
But this is on Netflix.
Is it
a Netflix movie? Oh. So yeah.
Mm. But good people here for it.
Good people. Mm. Yeah, I'm not dissing the fact it's on Netflix at all. Yeah. Absolutely not.
Speaking of good people, Robert Pattinson is reuniting with Claire Denis after
and
High Life.
It feels so good.
And this, I'm joined by Margaret Qualley from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So it's adapting a 1986 novel, which is set during 1984 in the Nicaraguan Revolution. And it's about a mysterious English businessman and headstrong American journalist who have a passionate romance. I'm guessing... that's our two leads, and then have to try and stay together and escape the country with only one another to rely on.
What?
Dun,
dun, dun.
So yeah, that should be exciting. I feel like Claire Denis doing that kind of thriller is not obvious. So I think it'll be interesting.
Exciting stuff.
And in more exciting reteaming news, Martin McDonagh.
Uh huh.
Colin Farrell.
Oh.
Brendan Gleeson.
What?
Brendan Gleeson's streaky beard.
No.
Yes. We hope. I don't know about the beard, actually. He hasn't been confirmed yet. But...
Marmalade.
But yeah, apparently they're all getting back together after In Bruges. It's due to start shooting this summer, and it's about two lifelong friends on a remote Irish island. Which one, though? Aaron? Rathlin? Oh, it's so exciting.
The other ones? Oh, is that it? What's the one that's in Star Wars?
St. Michael's Mount? It's not St. Michael's Mount, but something like that.
Something like
Skellig
that.
Michael.
Skellig Michael. That's it. There you go. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's the secret Star Wars sequel. Maybe they're hanging out with Luke Skywalker.
I was so watched that as well.
Yeah.
I just watched those three do anything.
Can I get a wood watch?
Woodward.
There we go.
Oh, yeah.
It's exciting. See, we're getting at the swing of things now with the old movie news. It's all happening. This is going to really knock your socks off, guys. Jake Johnson and Omar Sy are returning to Jurassic World.
Hey.
In Jurassic World 3.
What?
Now, I will give each of you a shiny penny if you can tell me who they played in the first Jurassic World movie.
Keep your penny.
Omar Sy would have been French person name?
No.
And
you were so off the mark. You were so off the mark.
Damn it. I was sure I was right on that one. And Jake Johnson wore a Jurassic Park original t-shirt.
He did. And he flirted outrageously, or tried to flirt outrageously with Lauren Lapkus.
Yeah, who was then eaten egregiously violently, right?
No, she got away.
She got away?
Yep.
Yes, I was mixing her up with the babysitter.
Yes. I will put you out of your misery.
Please, I'm just miserable.
The world has been clamoring with one voice. Bring back Lowry Crothers. And that is Jake Johnson's character.
Lowry Crothers.
Lowry.
Okay.
And Omar Sy, of course, is playing the most French-sounding character in the world. Barry.
Well, of course, there's Madame de Barry, who was genuinely a mistress of Louis the 15th, I think. I'm not kidding. Madame de Barry, look it up.
No, I'm not laughing at that. I'm laughing. Oh, my gosh.
I was clarifying for Chris's face, which didn't seem to believe me.
I believe you. Man. I believe you.
That's amazing.
Is this exciting? Isn't it exciting? They're back. They're finally back.
To be fair, I mean, we're about to talk about Omar Sy a little bit when we talk about the review section, but he is always somebody I like seeing on screen. So I'm happy that he's back in this big franchise, because the last big franchise he was a part of, the X-Men franchise, he got a raw deal as Bishop. So
he was a good Bishop.
Yeah. I wish that they hadn't... Bishop doesn't need a gun. Bishop is the gun. And I hate that they gave him a gun in Days of Future Past. I don't know why this turned into a Days of Future Past spoiler special, but...
Well, because he has when he first appeared in the comics, he had a big old F-off gun.
But yeah...
Why did I censor myself there?
No, Bishop's whole thing is that he absorbs the energy and
I know what Bishop's whole thing is.
He's just making it clear for the
Jesus.
Listener.
Anyway, I like Omar Sy.
Yes, we like Omar Sy.
I like Jake Johnson too. He obviously played a brilliant Peter Parker in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Mm-hmm. He did.
So, happy he's still getting work too.
Yes, indeed. And I hope they bring back Lauren Lapkus.
Yeah.
Bring her back, you monsters.
Bring her back.
Bring her back.
Bring her back.
Oh, Maloko.
To me.
Oh, yeah. Are we singing things that are not... Yeah, it feels like that wasn't the tune.
It was the tune.
Yeah.
Bring it back.
See, that's more swing the bring. You were okay, going, bring it back.
I sang the right tune, just like a little bit lower, because I was trying not to be like loud.
Okay.
And
stuff. All right. Okay. Fair enough. Also, you were talking about snacks earlier on. Did anyone see the footage this week of Harrison Ford doing an interview with, I think it was Entertainment Tonight?
Yep.
In the
I
States.
Saw that.
And the lady journalist was massively unprofessional.
Yep.
And said that he was basically a hottie.
Yeah.
She used the words, you're a snack.
Correct.
Which tickled him a lot.
It did.
Yeah, because in 77 you hear the word snack, you get excited. You think, oh, yeah, what's that? Yeah, Werther's? Is it Werther's time? I want a Werther's.
Oh my goodness, he is a snack, though. Of course he is. He's a snack for life. Have you seen that? Well, we'll talk about him in a minute.
We will.
To the reviews.
No, we'll talk about him now, in fact, because he has confirmed this week that Indiana Jones 5 is going to start filming in 2 months or so.
I still can't figure out the
next year.
I still can't figure out the numbering. Like, what's with that, you know? What happened to 4, guys?
Sorry.
Come on.
I don't know what I said.
It doesn't make any sense.
Why did I say that? The fourth Indiana Jones movie will start shooting... in about 2 months' time. And now it's been 31 years since the last one, Helen.
Like, hasn't been an Indiana Jones movie since 1989.
Not to my knowledge. That's
not
for sure.
That I've seen.
That's for sure.
So, this is exciting, I guess.
I mean, bringing a character back after so long.
Such a long time. This is
what
like Fast
do?
Eddie territory, isn't it?
It really is. You know, big gap between Wall Street and Wall Street Never Sleeps. Hustler and Color of Money, would that be the record? Or Psycho 2, who knows?
Who knows?
But presumably the gap between Indiana Jones and Last Crusade, which came out in 1989 and was the last Indiana Jones movie, and this movie, which will come out in 2021, that's a big gap.
Big time.
Big gap.
Great. I mean, you know, fantastic.
So that's
what could go wrong?
Extrapolate. If we extrapolate 30 years on and Indy presumably isn't his real age in the movie, right? He'll be
unless
maybe
we're Irishmaning
60s.
It. Yeah.
Oh, can you imagine? 60s or so? Actually, they might do that. Who knows? This movie would probably take place when? 1960s?
Yeah, mid-60s. Post-Cuban Missile Crisis, pre-Free Love, I guess, theoretically.
You know, if they're bringing in more talent with this
Vietnam?
One, I think, you know, Shia LaBeouf would actually be pretty great.
He's what?
Just come off Honey Boy, you know, Peanut Butter Falcon. You know, I think
he's
a bit
indie for a film like this, I think.
He's a bit indie for indie.
Oh,
wait a
wow.
Second. No, I think I like Shia LaBeouf. Certainly his career has come back on track over the last few years. He seems to got himself back together again. That's fantastic. But I just don't see him, top of my head, Indiana Jones' son. I don't see that. I don't see that working. I think it would be...
Doesn't make any sense.
Horrible miscasting. And but there's so many great British character actors to choose from. You could have Ray Winston in your movie. You could have Jim Broadbent in your movie.
What?
You could have Kate Blanchett in your
Blanchett,
film.
Kate Blanchett, like, that makes sense.
She's not British, but, you know.
No, but, you know.
She could do any accent. So,
really, any.
Yeah, really
definitely.
Anything at all. So if you were to go down that route...
I'm having this weird sensation right now. I can't explain.
Don't know what you're talking about.
But, it's like deja vu, but...
Genuinely speaking, that's all jokes aside, Helen. Is this a good idea? Should they do this? Spielberg is... So in 2 months' time, Spielberg is about to roll cameras with Harrison Ford, who will be 78, 79, roughly, by the time this movie comes out, unless he ages 2 years at a time, I don't know. But he's going to be in that ballpark. He's going to be pushing 80 by the time he comes out. And of course, he can still kick any of our arses,
even you,
Amon. I mean, you know, clearly you work out, but...
I work out.
Clearly, you run. It's not the same.
I also work out.
You work out, but it's not the same as running. And I obviously am temple man. I have a body that is a temple, and Harrison Ford now and again might care to explore it. And what in his capacity as an archaeologist, of course.
That makes sense.
But he's going to be pushing 80. Spielberg, do they need to do this? Couldn't they just leave it at Last Crusade? Genuinely, couldn't they just leave this movie and no one would go, where's that Indiana Jones 5 I was promised?
I really, really do hope. You know, my motto is in Spielberg we trust. Like, Spielberg is the man.
Uh-huh.
And I really, really hope that he is not doing this without good reason. Because I feel like if he was just kind of trying to scratch an itch and, you know, make George Lucas happy, I feel like that would have happened a while ago. And I feel like
Apparently isn't involved.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. So that happened if it happened a while ago, and he probably would have learned from that if it had happened, and therefore he'd probably be...
You're referring to the fan film.
So I feel like he would be probably, you know, a step further forward than that and a step further towards being good.
I don't feel like Spielberg is the sort of person who just bring this back for the hell of it. So, I will give him the benefit of the doubt, and I think it could work.
Mm-hmm.
I think it could work.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You think...
Do we know if John Williams is coming back for the score for this one?
I'd say...
If he doesn't, we riot.
Certainly.
Unless ill health or, you know, he's unavailable.
I mean, I think we still riot, but, you know, but respectfully and quietly.
Very, very quietly.
Yeah.
Listen, every day is Christmas Eve at Empire, and we're hopeful. Maybe they are driven to do this by wanting to set the record straight and wanting to get it right. And, you know, we all have our little jokes and our little yucks about Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. It's not a good film, and it has somewhat sullied the reputation of Indy on the big screen. And maybe they want to put it right. Maybe they do, and hopefully they do. I've got, listen, I've got nothing against Harrison Ford giving this one last crack at 77. I think it's going to be interesting is the film's attitude and the approach towards his age as well. Is it going to be slightly, are they going to acknowledge it, for example, or are they going to pretend basically that it's still the indie of, in his 30s and 40s?
But then, so much of his, it is an interesting one because so much of his adventures was him failing at stuff. And so much of the stuff that worked about it was him solving mysteries and figuring things out. So that stuff you can kind of still have. Mm-hmm. It's only the, diving under doors at the last minute to get your hat that he might need a bit of help with.
Well, he can, but he'd need a hip replacement afterwards. That's
right.
The
so you want to get somebody else in. I want Glenn Powell. I don't know why that name came into my head, but I think he'd be really good in an indie movie. But, you need somebody like that with him. You need maybe some people around him to do that stuff. But actual indiness, like him in a tweed jacket, I think we're all here for Harrison Ford in tweed. So that can still work. And I'm excited about it. And, I'm here for basically every single Steven Spielberg film that ever has been made or will be made. West Side Story, of course, first.
Yes.
So that'll be exciting too.
But do you think this could be maybe a more, not an elegiac movie? I'm not expecting it to be the Irishman of Indiana Jones movies.
Here for the Irishman of Indiana Jones movies?
I kind of would be here, but I'm not expecting it to be Logan either in that way. I don't expect it to be a death march. I don't expect Indy to slowly, like end with him just slowly dying. It's not going to be Death in Venice, but with Indiana Jones. Death in Venice. But I do wonder what it's going to be. Could it be... I don't necessarily want it to be a case of he has aged into becoming his dad, dressed all in tweed and being very, very professorial and very academic. And maybe he's put the whip and the jacket away and then maybe events conspire in his life.
Yeah, I think there'll be a bit of that.
To bring it back in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your son is now watching his entire back catalogue in a cinema. Something needs to be done. You need to go in and sort him out. That sort of thing.
I think there's room here for something good. And in Spielberg we trust, man.
In Spielberg we trust. Let's see how much wisdom those words hold next year. Listen, I hope it's great. I hope it's great. Anything else before we move on?
I was just going to say, who else would be on that list of directors you don't doubt? I know you got James Cameron. You got Steve Spielberg.
Steve.
My good friend Steve.
Wow.
What up, Steve?
Wow. No.
Yeah, Spielberg, Cameron.
I'll go and see any Coen Brothers movie.
Okay.
This is not to say that all of these people's movies all work equally well, but I will always go out of my way to see these people.
I put Coogler on my list right now.
Mm-hmm. I would say, obviously, Gerwig right now is batting 100. Mm. Patty Jenkins is batting 100. Mm.
These are incredible cricket scores.
Is that what they say? I don't really know. There's a whole... Let's be honest, we're in this job because we have a lot of people who are in this kind of field for us.
It is true.
Bong Joon-ho, actually.
Yes.
There's loads. There's absolutely loads. There's loads. Too many to count. Too many to say. Director I really like is Adam McKay, and the last bit of movie news before we move on is that the next Adam McKay film is coming, and it is going to be a satire about the end of the world. Anyone who...
A little close to the bone, Adam.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because when I interviewed him last, I think it was last January for the Empire podcast, we were talking about, obviously he's still going to do daft comedies, and this seems to be in that vein a little bit. Yeah, he's the director of Anchorman, the other guy, Step Brothers, in case you Big Short, and Vice, of course, most recently. But he's he is very politically aware. Yeah, he's very socially conscious, and he is aware that we are facing a climate emergency is the latest phrase. But we're fucked. Basically, is a nice way of putting it. Mm. And we talk about Hollywood's responsibility. I've talked about this in the podcast with various guests. Hollywood's responsibility in terms of getting the message across to people, and would they believe it more in a film coming from a film than say from a politician? So this movie is about, it's going to be starring Jennifer Lawrence, and it's called Don't Look Up, and it's about two astronomers who have to embark on a media tour to warn mankind, and an approaching asteroid is going to destroy Earth. So Adam McKay said to me that he thought maybe his next topic would be global warming in some way, and it don't get much hotter than an asteroid hitting the planet and scorching all the skin off our bones.
But it's a good metaphor, isn't it? Like, ooh, we're headed for a disaster.
Meteor.
Oh, sorry, my mistake.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm excited. I hope it'll be good.
Yeah.
No, I like the sound of that. Jennifer Lawrence is obviously taking a bit of a break from acting to do life stuff.
Yes.
So it'd be good to see her back on screens.
Indeed.
Even if it's a Netflix screen.
Yeah. I wonder what sort of comedy it's going to be. Is it going to be a big short type comedy, which, you know, gives way to, you know, paralyzing horror at the state of the world, or is it going to be an Anchorman Step Brothers style comedy, which is wild and wacky?
I think you know that the answer is the first one. Sorry,
I think I do, but I still think he has. I think he still has Anchorman in his veins, yeah. Adam McKay. So who knows? We shall see what happens, and that should be out on Netflix. It's a Netflix movie next year, providing, of course, we haven't all melted by that point.
Mm. That would be nice.
Indeed.
Oh God!
All right, time now for this week's guest. Exciting.
Ooh.
I said last week we had two guests. We're going to have Elizabeth Moss, but I've bumped her to next week's show.
Oh, my God.
Next week's show, Elizabeth Moss, star of The Invisible Man.
You're like Jimmy Kimmel and Matt
Damon. I am. She is. Yeah. Elizabeth Moss is outside the room right now. Sorry, Elizabeth. You're going to have to go home now. Sorry, you've been waiting there for 3.5 hours, but come back next week. No, that's in the can, so I'm going to push you back to next week. Instead, we're going to hear from Justin Kurtzel, who is the Australian director of some light poppy fare. Snowtown.
Mm.
A jolly film about serial killers.
Oh, yes.
Yay!
Assassin's Creed.
Oh,
that jolly poppy film about assassins being in a creed. Macbeth.
Oh, man, that's a comedy right there.
Jolly happy-go-lucky film about a murderous king.
Is this a dagger I see before me? Lol.
And other lines from that play. Did I mention I saw Upstart Crow? Did I say in last week's podcast, did I tell you I saw Upstart Crow?
You told me you were going.
Technically speaking, yeah. I think means I've seen 3 of Shakespeare's plays now because they're referenced in there.
No.
It's great, by the way. Upstart Crow is fantastic. It's the stage version of the hit BBC One sitcom starring David Mitchell as William Shakespeare. And they've done a stage version of it written by Ben Elton. And this one's much funnier than All Is True, by the way.
I mean,
it's not difficult, but this is much, much funnier than All Is True, even though thematically it covers some of the same ground.
Okay.
And, you know, post-death of his son Hamlet, all that sort of stuff. So it's quite, you're thinking, oh, how can you get the yucks into this? Well, it's very, very simple. They have a dancing bear. And lots of futticking wordplay.
Did he follow people stage left?
I don't want to spoil punchlines for you, Helen.
All right, well.
But yes. Yes, it's really tremendous. And go and see it if you can. Only playing for a few more weeks at the Gielgud Theatre. Why does this feel like an advert?
It really isn't.
But go see it. It's fantastic. But Macbeth.
Yeah.
Is not as funny as Upstart Crow. But Justin Kurtzel is a filmmaker.
Uncontroversial.
I'm desperately trying to bring this back on track. Justin Kurtzel is a filmmaker who is very, very serious of mind, serious of subject. And his latest film sees him returning to his homeland of Australia to make the true history of the Kelly Gang, which is about Ned Kelly and his gang. Ned Kelly played in this movie by George Mackay, most recently, of course, of 1917 and other stuff. Who else is in this movie? Essie Davis.
Russell Crowe,
Nicholas Holt, Charlie Hunnam, great, great cast, looks terrific, and that will be out next week. The film is out next week, but you're going to hear from Justin Kurtzel now, and he's going to be talking to John Nugent. John Nugent, enjoy.
Justin Kurtzel, welcome to the Empire Podcast.
Yeah, thank you.
How are you doing?
Yeah, good, good. Just, yeah, looking forward to the film opening here, it'd be great.
Yeah, and are you just in from Australia?
Yeah, I got in on Thursday.
Okay. Yeah. So still dealing with jet lag? Are you?
No, I'm pretty good now.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm pretty used to sort of these long travels. So, yeah, it's nice being back. I lived here for sort of 4 or 5 years making a couple of films. So it's really lovely being back.
Nice. So we're here to talk about your new film, True History of the Kelly Gang.
Yeah.
That title, I guess, is a little bit ironic. That was the intention of the book on which it's based, Peter Carey's book.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about that opening title, which says nothing of what you are about to see is true.
Yeah, and then it sort of fades out apart from true, and then it goes True History of the Kelly Gang.
Yeah. That's really interesting.
Well, it was because when Peter wrote the book,
yeah,
the title is True History of the Kelly Gang in the book, and I think the irony of it, I think, kind of missed a lot of people. I think most people thought that he was, it was actually stating true. It was the true definitive history of Ned Kelly, you know, burn all you that don't believe this. It was kind of, and it was completely, it was a, you know, he was being a rascal. It was like, it was a play on words. And it was also, it was a, you know, it was a commentary about, you know, the way we rewrite history and the way these sort of figures' history is sort of stolen from them and they suddenly become, you know, a carnival.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just wanted the audience to sort of be, have a context at the beginning that, especially an Australian audience, that, you know, we weren't making the definitive Ned Kelly. Actually, what we were doing is you know, creating a dialogue about, you know, myths and legends and what is real, and that somehow through all of this, you know, interrogation as to kind of who this man was and is, that we'd be able to find some sort of truth there that might not necessarily link up to the real Ned Kelly, but actually say a lot about who we are as Australians and kind of why we look for answers in a man like this. So there was a there was a sort of playfulness to it that, that I thought was kind of really important, just tonally setting up the film.
Yeah, I mean, for someone like Ned Kelly, I guess the myth is almost as powerful as the history, right?
Yeah, like, you know, when I grew up, you know, you'd have a Ned Kelly pie and I remember my parents taking me to kind of like, you know, Olden Town there with colonial Australia, and there'd be kind of like a cutout Ned Kelly and there's there's a 20-foot version of him, you know, in one of the towns, and you go and see his armour, and I'd never really quite understood why I was going to see him. Like it was always like whenever I'd ask a question like, what did he do or what did he, who is he and stuff, my parents were always a little vague as to kind of, and I noticed it, you know, as we were making it, like when you kind of talk to people about, well, who is he and what does he mean to us? I mean, even the artifacts of his that we sort of still keep, which is the green sash that he was awarded as a kid and the death face that he kind of was made after his death and his armour are all in three different locations around Victoria. The armour's in a little kind of alleyway sort of that's quite dark and sort of, at the front of the museum, it's like Ned Kelly's armour's here. But actually when you want to talk about it in a sort of sophisticated way, it gets really awkward. And we don't quite know why or how we're supposed to kind of, you know, acknowledge and celebrate him. So that's always sort of intrigued me about him, and you know, and definitely was a huge part of the, I don't know, the DNA of the book.
Yeah, because so much of the book and the film is about, I guess, storytelling and what it means to be have a myth.
Yeah,
I mean, and how much of the film do you think is actually true to history, or is that an impossible question?
Well, no, look, I think there are many aspects of it that feel very true, and that, you know, you can feel that Peter's you know, deeply researched it, but at the same time, it's fictitious. It's a, you know, there are certain events and things that happen in it that try to get us closer to kind of understanding, you know, maybe the real world, the real kind of truth of kind of who this guy was and you know, why we kind of hold him up the way we kind of do. But definitely there's aspects of it that are very real and that, you know, you can't ignore. You know, we just wanted, I, you know, as I think Peter did, wanted to be really liberated by, you know, not sort of doing this sort of pastiche kind of historical piece on this guy that we've had 100 stories, you know, about, and there's been many films made about. And, you know, sometimes I watch those films or I sort of read the books and, you know, when I was doing research and sort of felt they were as fantastical as anything else. So, you know, it's interesting how his sort of truth has been shifted and changed to whatever kind of agenda there is that, you know, that's around.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there are so many. There's what, a dozen or so films made.
Yeah,
about
and
this
the
guy,
first ever film, live action film, was a Ned Kelly film.
Yeah. So was that part of the impulse for making this? Is like a challenge to almost make something feel fresh and new.
It was, yeah. Look, it was the thing that I was scared of, and I didn't do anything with it for like 6 or 7 years, and sort of made a couple of films here, and you know, always kind of thought, there's no way I'm doing that. That's a hiding to hell, that one. And, you know, and it kind of has been. but I just like, yeah, I was missing home. I'd just come off a really, really big film. It was a really challenging experience. Mm. I was desperately trying to kind of find my voice again a little bit and really missing Australian characters and Australian narrative. And this was, well, okay, if I'm going to dive back in to do an Australian story, well, you know, there ain't much bigger than another Ned Kelly film. So there was a sort of challenge there and a provocation there that I was kind of really interested in. Mm. And, you know, and it's an amazing book. It's just an absolute bloody masterpiece of a book. And that you know, really kind of helped us sort of define what sort of film we were going to make in the first place.
Yeah. But as you sort of say, he is a complicated figure, Ned Kelly. I mean, he's a folk hero for a lot of people, but also, you know, he is potentially a cold-blooded murderer.
Yeah.
What are your sort of personal feelings towards him? Did they change as the film, during the course of making the film?
I had empathy and sympathy for, like, when we were doing the scenes of Ned writing and writing his own history, that I sort of started to imagine kind of, you know, well, I just started to see and feel that idea of, and especially at the end of the film with Curno, sort of, you know, creating a kind of new story for entertainment about Ned Kelly's tragedy. I had a kind of an empathy and perspective there about how his history was kind of rewritten that I, you know, definitely didn't have before. I had no idea about the Ellen Kelly story with Ned, the sort of power and influence that the, you know, that Ned's mother had over him. And that was something kind of really fresh and new that I knew when making it and when we were writing it, it was going to be a kind of very different point of view than the usual Robin Hood, him robbing banks and, you know, kind of, you know, bailing up against authority. So that was a sort of very intimate kind of part of the story that I wasn't aware of. In terms of like whether I have a point of view as to whether he's a murderer or a cop, you know, a cop killer or a kind of Robin Hood of sorts, it's really hard to. I found it really hard to judge a guy that was kind of, you know, living in those times in Australia, that there were some pretty bloody bad things happening all over the place, you know, especially to, you know, the Indigenous in Australia. So to suddenly kind of like, you know, go so, you know, I just think that those times were so grey, you know, and that there was a lot of things that were happening that were shaping individuals and obviously very conflicting ideas of what was good and bad. So I find it very hard to sort of judge him the way some people do.
Yeah. There's one aspect of this film that I hadn't seen in any Ned Kelly film, which is that the Kelly gang wear dresses.
Yeah.
Which is sort of, it's such a sort of striking image to see these like alpha male, really violent men wearing women's dresses.
Yeah.
Is that true to the history?
There were reports of Steve Hart wearing dresses. And there's been some sort of amazing paintings by Sidney Nolan of him wearing a dress. I think Peter kind of connected some of those kind of thoughts and ideas to, you know, Irish rebels that did, you know, wear dresses as forms of kind of intimidating the English, you know, in the 1800s. So we, as sort of Peter did, extended that, and we also thought it was an incredibly interesting thing to do to an Australian male. You know, there's a kind of masculinity to the Australian male that,
right.
You know, maybe we were challenging a little bit with the dresses, but they were never supposed to be, the dresses were always supposed to be about a legacy. They were always supposed to be about, you know, the fact that, well, our ancestors wore them and this is our new armour and, you know. But they've certainly become, in the conversation back home, they've become a very provocative thing of either dismissing the film as kind of, you know, fucking Ned Kelly wearing dress, what the fuck's that? Or, you know, or, you know, being really kind of, you know, thinking it was a style choice.
Right.
But it was always as a kind of a way in which the boys were liberated, you know. It was never about their sexuality. It was always about kind of the empowerment that they got from these dresses and the significance of them with their ancestors. And you know, they'd never wore them at Glenrowan, but we just sort of felt as though they were so important in the kind of transformation of those boys that we wanted to kind of play them through to the end.
Yeah, and there's something kind of radical and punk about it as well, and the way they do it, right?
Yeah, there's something very creative, like creatively liberating about it. And you know, you know, it was really interesting seeing the boys wear them because they, you know, they got to a point where they didn't even know they were wearing dresses for a while there. And it was kind of really fascinating how they just were blind to them and that lovely kind of. But I don't know, you know, it's always intrigued me, you know. And growing up playing football and, you know, watching kind of Mad Mondays after the season ends and seeing these big burly kind of Aussie males suddenly arrive in Mad Monday wearing dresses. I mean, I don't know what the fuck's going on there, but we do, like, as an Australian male, we do love getting in a dress, you know.
I'm not familiar with Mad Monday. This is the thing.
It's like your piss up that you have at the end of your footy season. Okay. And they call it the Mad Monday because it happens on the first Monday after the Saturday game or the last game of the season.
Yeah.
And usually people dress up. And, you know, you pretty much 80% of the guys when they arrive at the Mad Monday are wearing dresses and dressing up as women. So it's always, you know, it's always entertained me that after football side is wearing dresses at the end of the season. So.
I was going to ask what the response has been like back in Australia, because obviously you've got George McKay playing this Australian national hero, and he's a Brit. I mean, he's got Australian heritage, but he's still a POM, right? I mean,
It hasn't been much sort of kind of feedback on that.
Yep.
Maybe because there's been too many other things to talk about in the film
that
would get up people's noses. But no, he maybe because he did such a good job, he really does feel Australian in it, and his accent's kind of really great. It's been really divided. You know, there are those that are, I think, really excited by how the film, you know, really gives you a kind of very different perspective of the kind of Ned Kelly story and prods and pokes at the kind of mythology of him. And then there are others that are deeply kind of angry that, you know, we've taken a certain kind of character that means a certain thing and kind of, you know, placed him in a light that's, you know, different from what people know. You know, and then there are those that really have trouble with kind of the idea of kind of changing history, you know, and kind of, you know, going against kind of what really happened and presenting kind of Ned Kelly in this kind of more sort of, I guess, sort of heightened way. So it's really divided. Those that kind of, you know, you can tell are kind of really go with it and get something out of it, and those that kind of go, you know, well, it's just too far.
Are you kind of glad with that response? Would you have been disappointed if it would have been all, you know, all roses?
Look, you know, if I'm honest, I always hate, you know, when someone doesn't like something that you do and and they're really passionate about telling you, that's never a nice place to be. But at the same time, I mean, I'd be kidding myself if I didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, I went into this because it was a provocative thing. It was, you know, I think that was part of the reason why I wanted to do it, because I knew that it would, you know, be a divisive film in whatever way, but you sort of forget that when you're making it and you fall in love with it and it's your baby.
Yeah.
And then you kind of, I remember when I did Snowtown, it was kind of, I knew doing it was going to be a divisive thing, and then you do it and you fall in love with it and you really care for it and it's your little kind of child and baby, and then you forget the fact that it's going to, the reason you did it in the first place was there are going to be a lot of people that really hate your baby. but you get really sensitive about it at the end because you kind of forget that that's one of, you know, that you know, you're making something that you genuinely believe in, and you're putting everything in and you're passionate about, and you're not doing it for anything other than that.
So
you do get really, really sensitive.
But this film has a kind of punk spirit to it, right? Like it's I mean, everything in it feels quite punk. I read somewhere that you got the actors to form a punk band.
Yeah, I did. I only had them for sort of 2 or 3 weeks, and we had to get them as a gang, and I was like, how the hell are we going to do that? So unless you're sort of going off and you're in a sports team in Australia, you know, where you can very quickly get your gang quite close. The only other medium was music, you know, and being in a band, and I'd been in a band before, and there is nothing like that kind of, you know, camaraderie and the fear of actually going out on stage and sort of playing. So I booked a venue, and it was a pretty big venue in Melbourne and notorious for independent music. And I said to the guys, you got, you know, two weeks to come up with a set, and you're booked in and you've got to turn up and do it. And
wow.
And they went about and did it. You know, in the first 3 or 4 days, I was like, this is going to be absolutely terrible. And what have I done to them? And, it's going to be humiliating. And actually, they're not going to feel like a gang. They're going to feel like a bunch of losers. And then they just started playing really interesting riffs. And I was very lucky with them. They were all sort of they weren't semi-music. There were, you know, some of them there that were, had a real sort of past, a musical past. So after 2 weeks, they came up with a set of like 11 songs, and they played that night to 300 people, and they were really good. They were really amazing. And at the end of it, they walked on set and they were the Kelly Gang. They were like, you know, they were really comfortable with each other, confident. They had a swagger. They couldn't give a shit about anything else. They were a band and they were a gang. So, and that was, you know, the songs were so, you know, two of the songs made it into the film. You know, there was something kind of like, it was just, I just knew that there were two pieces there that felt really natural to the process of making the film and felt really right. And we're now going to release the album. We're going to do it independent to the film. We're going to let the boys kind of release it as their band because they kind of, you know, formed the band and came up with a completely separate name to the film. And so they're going off to do, they're going to do, I don't think they'll play again, but, well, they might, but, hopefully it'll be out there recorded, you know, and people will be able to hear it, but we recorded the whole album and it's being mastered now. And hopefully it'll be out there.
And did the people at this Melbourne gig know who they were seeing?
They just thought it was a new independent Australian band. You know, that sort of come out of nowhere.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we look forward to that album.
Yeah.
I think that's my time, Justin, but thank you so much.
No worries. It's been great. Yeah, pleasure.
All right, so that was Justin Kurtzel, and now we decided to talk about this week's reviews. There's quite a few films clamoring for your attention at the box office this week. And a couple of weeks ago, we had Michael Winterbottom and Steve Coogan on the live show, our 400th episode. They were fantastic, talking about their latest collaboration because they worked together loads and loads and loads and loads and loads. This one's called Greed, and is about, kind of, Sir Philip Green. But not really, for legal reasons. Yeah. So, Amon.
Yeah. Steve Coogan, Michael Wittenbaum joint. Steve Coogan plays Sir Richard Greedy McCready. He gives himself that nickname. He's a high street fashion mogul who's trying to put together an extravagant 60th birthday party on a Greek island to sort of showcase his wealth and power, but he keeps running into problems which he has to try and figure out, including but not limited to a Colosseum stage that may not get built in time. Gladiator is his favorite film, we should mention, and that was my favorite running joke in the film, actually, because I am a massive Gladiator fan. So I was actually checking to see if they were getting all the lines right, and they did.
Of course
they did. Yeah, especially the Maximus Dexus video and so on. Do you know it?
I am Maximus, you know the name, commander of the five armies.
Legions of the North.
Okay, continue.
There's something of the...
Oh, boy.
Oh, I can't remember the second bit.
I'm Maximus Listen, I knew Rudeus Omar Sykes played fucking Barry, all right?
Let me put you out of your misery.
Yeah.
My name is Maximus Decimus Rudeus.
Yeah.
commanded the armies of the North. In general of the Phoenix Legions.
That's Phoenix Legions.
The new world of gods and monsters.
Loyal servant to the true emperor, Marcus Aurelius.
Oh my God, he's gone off.
Father to a murdered son.
I'm on focus.
Husband to a murdered wife. And I will have my vengeance.
The takeaway has kicked in.
In this life or the next.
Correct, Helen.
Got there in the end.
Is it at my command, unleash hell, or at my signal, unleash hell?
Signal.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, I could sort of quote half of that movie verbatim.
Please don't. I beg of you.
Hey.
Back to greed. Let's bring it back.
Do we have to? I was having so much fun.
Let's focus.
So, yeah, greed. Steve Coogan is really entertaining in this movie. I really enjoyed his performance a lot. He's having a blast. Isla Fisher is also in this movie, and she doesn't have a lot of screen time, but she makes an impression. I thought she was good. I think this gets mired in one too many subplots, though. There's a recurring thing of a reality sort of TV camera crew recording the MacReady's family, which is so sporadic that the movie might as well have done without it, I think.
Interestingly enough, by the way, Lo, stars one of the people who's in this reality TV show within the film,
right,
is Ollie from Made in Chelsea.
I think.
And he's good.
Yeah.
He's actually good in this, which I was like, I know that guy. I've seen that guy before. He's like, of course, it's Made in Chelsea bloke.
You watch Made in Chelsea?
Occasionally. Okay. But not for years.
Interesting.
But
I'm learning things today.
Yeah.
it's also a little heavy-handed and obvious for me, which limits its effectiveness. Although that being said, when the credit sequence sort of has a number of sort of things which pop up giving you information on the real life goings on in the industry, and that, even though it was preaching to the converted, it did sort of leave its mark. So we gave it 3 stars. I think that's about right. It's a little obvious, but it's worthwhile.
Yeah, it's fun. It's not as good maybe as some of the previous things they've done together. Obviously, let's take the trip.
Right.
Mm. And the trip to Spain, the trip to Italy, and the forthcoming trip to Greece, and put them aside. The films they've done together, so 24 Hour Party People and Cock and Bull Story, which I think is probably their pinnacle together. I think that movie's terrific. The Look of Love, probably the least successful of their collaborations. This is good. This is fine. I mean, this is an interesting new character for Coogan. Tim Key is in this movie as well, but I don't think they get too many scenes together, in case you're wondering whether Psychic Simon and Alan Partridge are reunited on screen. It doesn't really happen in this one. David Mitchell is knocking around in this as well, as a journalist who's writing MacReady's biography, official biography, and he becomes a little bit dismayed as he sees the monster behind the very expensively reconstructed smile. Yeah. And David Mitchell's fine in this. You know, he's essentially playing David Mitchell in this. Of course, if you want to see more of David Mitchell, he is starring as William Shakespeare in Upstart Crow, which is playing at the Gilgit Theatre for the next 10 weeks or so. Tickets are on sale right now at Upstart Crow Play.
Oh my God.
I'm guessing at that.
Get a grip.
anyway, sorry. Yes, back to greed. It's fine. It made me laugh a few times. There's fun bits. There's a CG lion knocking around, which is cool. Not always 100% convincing, but hey, you go with it. It does, when it starts to stray into lecture territory, it does become a little bit heavy-handed, I have to say. But otherwise, I enjoyed it fine. Good stuff. 3 stars.
Correct.
Cool.
3 stars then for greed, and let's move on next to The Return of the Snack. It is Harrison Ford opposite, talking to CG animals. This is a real week for CG animals, isn't it?
It really is, actually.
We've got a CG lion in Greed. We've got a CG dog in Call of the Wild.
We do.
The Call of the Wild.
Get
sorry.
It right, Chris. Come on.
Sorry.
Yeah, so it's based on the Jack London novel, which is obviously very well known and has literally survived a century, which is no mean feat. Mm-hmm. It's an odd film, this. So it's basically about the dog character, not Harrison Ford, mm-hmm. particularly. The dog is called Buck. He lives with a judge played by Bradley Whitford until he is stolen by dog nappers. He is dog napped.
No!
Yes. Yeah. And transported to the Yukon because there's a gold rush on and they need dogs to pull sledges. So he joins a dog sled led by Omar Asai, who's a local postman.
Barry!
He's back. Francois, actually, here.
That sounds more like a...
It does sound like that's a little bit more French. And, I know, we were thinking Francois or maybe Jeff.
There some stuff happens. He also meets Harrison Ford up there, who's John Thornton, who is... you don't quite know what he's doing there. He says he's not there for the gold. Everybody else is there for the gold. So you don't quite understand why he's there for a little bit of the film. So I'm not going to spoil that. But I think what's frustrating slightly about this one is that they very much sold this as a Harrison Ford film with Harrison Ford and a dog. And it takes a long time for it to be a film about Harrison Ford and a dog.
Right.
Because it is a long time before that where you've got Bradley Whitford and you've got Omar Sy, and they're great, but ugh, it's not what we were expecting.
Isn't Dan Stevens in this as
Dan
well?
Dan Stevens is also in this. He plays another owner. I won't say too much about him either.
Oh.
He's got a very nice suit on, though.
It's certainly a suit. It's a heck of a lot of look. And yeah. Karen Gillan is in his section of the story as well.
Okay.
So I think what struck me about this is I kind of feel like when you go and see a film called The Call of the Wild, you want to see a real dog in real environments. And this has some gorgeous CG, but it is mostly, it feels like, CG.
The stills I've seen, it because I haven't seen this movie.
Sure.
The stills I've seen this movie, I look at that and go, oh, this will look nice when it's finished.
It does look nice. It does look nice. And... you know, the dog is beautifully animated. There's a couple of moments where there's maybe a little slip, but generally he's beautifully, beautifully done, as are all his fellow dogs on the sled. The backgrounds are stunning, but you just kind of feel like maybe Harrison Ford basically shot in a volume and didn't really go very far outside. And you kind of sometimes wish that they maybe just had. I feel like... And I understand why they went the way they did, because you need a lot of performance from this dog. It is a dog-focused story. He is the hero.
Okay.
But it's still a little bit distancing.
So this is directed by Chris Sanders, who directed previously You Love Lilo and Stitch.
Yep.
You love How to Train Your Dragon.
Absolutely.
The Croods, he also directed this. And it's been a while since then, but this is his first live-action movie.
Yeah, and it's one of those live-action movies where you kind of want to put that in inverted quotes. I mean, there is literally, at one point, if you look out on a notice board, there is a notice for A113, so which is obviously the running joke in Pixar movies and everything else. It's the Cal Arts classroom where animation is taught. So that kind of gives you an idea of the focus of this film. It feels very much animation rather than live action a lot of the time. It's very charming though.
Yeah, very charming. I went into it with little to no expectations and I ended up quite enjoying it. I would be very intrigued to see the Call of the Wild cut, which is just the green scene sequences of Harrison Ford and the dog.
Yeah, Terry Notary in a grey suit.
I'd pay good money to see that.
Love Terry Notary.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And it's just I think maybe some of the edges of Jack London's novel have maybe been a little bit rubbed off. You know, this is a family movie about a dog, and with all that implies, it's cute. Mm-hmm. It's very charming, but maybe wholesome. not an instant classic.
Interesting. We gave it 3 stars.
We did. Yeah.
We gave this 3 stars for The Call of the Wild. The Call of Wild. And next up, let's go back to you, Amon, because it is Like a Boss. Any CG animals in this one?
I'm trying to cast my mind back now. I don't
Goldfish,
think
perhaps?
So.
Don't think so.
Chihuahua?
I mean, some of the drone stuff might be CG.
Yeah, that's a point.
Mm. Not yeah, really a pet, though, is it? Not really something.
There's a baby.
A there CG is. Baby?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's one of the funnier moments of the film, though.
Disappointing.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what is Like a Boss, and should people go see it?
Like a Boss. So Mia is played by Tiffany Haddish, and Mel is played by Rose Byrne. They have been friends since they were in college, and now they run a cosmetics line, which is sadly unprofitable. But when Claire Luna, played by Salma Hayek, comes along, she offers to invest in their company. So the whole movie really is about should they sort of trust Salma Hayek's character and take the paycheck, or trust in the core beliefs of their company, which is more about sort of innate female beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what I liked about it, that message of female beauty, of female friendship as well. That comes through very strongly. And also Tiffany Haddish and Rose Byrne are really, really great and really, really fun together. I enjoyed their chemistry. But for me, a lot of the humor in this film is painfully unfunny.
Oh, no.
And this movie, I think it makes the mistake of mistaking awkwardness for humour. There's a lot of just stuff which is just awkward and just lingers. And in my screening, I'm not sure how it was in your screening, but there was very little laughter and it felt just awkward and weird. Hung there.
There are some great moments in this.
Yeah. Screenings are the worst place to see comedy.
Yeah, they are, yeah. Mm. But, I mean, there are some great moments. Billy Porter plays one of their company's employees.
He gets and the best moment in the film, easily.
There's a scene involving him in a restaurant that is hilarious. It's absolutely great. There's Salma Hayek, I think, her character, I can see what they're going for. I think it's misjudged, but she does get a couple of great lines. At one point somebody accused her of having a small head and she goes, no, I have a normal sized head, I just have humongous breasts. And that's pretty
funny. Not spoiling this in the trailer. That's great. I fully agree with that. I also think there's a bit of the Kevin Hart problem going on here, which is that it feels like the actors have just been told to improvise a lot and then we'll fix it in post. Because again, I think that's where some of the humor being unfunny comes from. Mm. They're just riffing and riffing and riffing. And for me anyway, not a lot of that was funny.
Yeah, someone needs to impose some structure sometimes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So,
it's basically like, oh, Tiffany Haddish will say the day because she'll do her thing.
Right.
And then if the thing isn't funny or it doesn't work or they choose a wrong take, which can happen as well. This is one of my big bugbears with particularly American comedy for the last few years as well. Listen, I love improv. Improv has its place, as I've said many, many times, but you can't just rely on it solely, I think. That's a shame. That's a shame. This is directed by Miguel Arteta, who has got some really good films in his back catalogue. Some not so great films either as well. But he recently, he directed Salma Hayek in Beatrice at Dinner, which we had Salma Hayek on the podcast for a couple of years ago. And that's a much darker drama in a way. So maybe they were just wanting to work together again. Maybe they just found one of the exercise a few different gears. It's Rose Byrne as well, who, for my money, is one of the sort of unsung comedy heroes of the last few years.
I think she's great. And I think she and Tiffany Haddish, I think, together have great chemistry and they just needed a little bit more direction.
The bits where you can tell that there is structure are really, really strong. Yeah. Like, just trying to think if I could talk about it without spoiling, but there's a bit where they both had to talk to different sets of female friends. And that sequence was fantastic for me. That really helped rescue some of the movie for me because I really wasn't enjoying it a lot until that point. And I just wish that there were more moments of that where the core themes of the movie, which are really strong and really good, really came through. If it did, then I think we might bump this up to a more favourable star rating.
Because at the moment it is getting...
2 stars.
2 stars. Just 2 stars for Like a Boss, which makes me feel that if you're going to watch one Rose Byrne comedy from the last couple of years, check out Instant Family.
I haven't.
And I'm not kidding either. It's really good.
I've heard good things. I want to see that. But I remember her, is it in the Neighbours movies that she's in?
Bad Neighbours, yeah.
Yeah, she's really good. She is great in those.
She's legit great in Spy.
Yeah,
yes.
She is
where
phenomenal.
Where is the sequel
in Spy
to that movie, Chris?
I don't know. Don't look at me. I'm not hiding it or anything. I have it on me.
Are you sure?
Maybe I do.
Fiend.
Oh my God. Sometimes I will just watch some of the Rick Ford scenes from that movie.
Jason Statham.
Yeah. I perform surgery to reattach my arm with my other arm or something like that. It's incredible. I once convincingly addressed Congress as Barack Obama.
Honestly, the only reason why... I wasn't sort of all the way mad about the potential about the Face Off 2 news that hit the web a while ago. Is that if Jason Statham is in Face Off 2, then it might make it worth it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, that's just blowing my mind.
Yeah, absolutely. So 2 stars then for Like a Boss. The film we really want to see, of course, is Spy 2. Helen, is Little Joe Spy 2?
Little Joe is not Spy 2.
No.
Little Joe is, and I don't think this is a spoiler because I think the trailer kind of sells it this way. Little Joe is kind of Invasion of the Body Snatchers meets Day of the Triffids, in the sense that we meet Alice, who's Emily Beecham's character. Emily obviously won Best Actress at Cannes this year for this movie. Mm-hmm. So she is developing a new plant at a small biotech company, and she's developed this plant that basically, it requires a lot of care. You have to really look after it. But if you do that, it will make you happy. It releases this smell that basically promotes serotonin production in the brain and will make you happier. Great.
Like almonds food.
Yeah. Oh, it looks so good.
You're welcome to have some after this.
Oh, no, don't worry about me. Oh, no.
Okay, this is for the... Do not say that I didn't offer you anything, okay? This is on the record.
Well, I mean, like, after it's been sitting cooling for an hour, that's fine.
There's a microwave in the office.
Anyway, so this comes from Jessica Hausner. It's her first, I think, English language film. And it's a really subtle film because it's kind of playing with the idea of, well, this plant is designed to change people's mood. But is it doing more than that? And is it doing anything at all? And can you be sure that people aren't just being people? And there's a sort of a critique, I think, of kind of the modern reliance on drugs, in particular in the mental health industry, to sort of pathologize people and maybe, I think, overprescribe drugs. There might be an element there of kind of, how much is too much interference in our own brains? How much is too much? But it plays out as a really interesting mix of kind of very, very low-key drama and kind of paranoia thriller as Alice begins to suspect that something might be wrong with some of her colleagues. You've got Kerry Fox as Bella, one of her colleagues. Ben Whishaw is another one. And her own son, Kit Connor, that something might not be right with her plants, but it's her baby, it's her work, and she's passionately devoted to it, and she's not quite sure, you know, what to trust. So it's a really interesting, bizarre kind of thriller, but very low-key. It also has the most disturbing soundtrack I maybe have ever heard. It's more disturbing, I think, than Uncut Gems. It is up there with the Winter Soldier theme in terms of like discord and
that
just
is a big statement.
It starts off with just this steadily rising, incredibly almost painful note. So yeah, it's a lot at stake, but it's incredibly effective in setting the scene. So yeah, interesting movie.
I'm a massive Emily Beecham fan. There's a show which is now unfortunately cancelled, which was great that she was in Into the Badlands, and she's great in that. So that makes me want to check it out for sure.
Yeah, she's fantastic. And if you saw Daphne last year, she's amazing in that as well.
And if you want to hear more from Emily Beecham, she, of course, was one of our guests on our jam-packed 400th episode. So go back in your podcast app of choice and check out that show as well. It is an absolute belter. And the film itself, we've given it 3 stars?
Yeah.
3 stars.
For me, it'd be a very, very high 3 at the very high least. If not a little bit higher. But it's really interesting and it kind of lingers with you.
All right, 3 stars then for Little Joe. And last but not least, Helen, you wanted to talk specifically about, I can't remember the name of it.
To All the Boys I've Loved Before, P.S. I Still Love You.
Okay.
I think it's just called To All the Boys, P.S. I Still Love You. It's very confusing.
It's now To All the Boys,
Yeah, but it's a sequel to All the Boys I Loved Before, which is the Netflix movie that was a massive sensation. Lana Condor stars as Lara Jean, who's a teenage girl who was in the habit of dealing with crushes that she had by writing a letter and not sending it to the boy involved. Mm-hmm. And then her little sister finds them one day. This is a spoiler for the first movie. Her little sister finds them and sends them all. So suddenly she comes in school one day and all the boys she'd ever had a crush on know that she had a crush on them. Oh my God, you would literally die. Anyway, but one of those boys is Peter Kavinsky, who's played by Noah Centineo. Uh-huh. Who's, of course, young Mark Ruffalo.
Yes.
And young Mark Ruffalo gets this letter, is discombobulated by it, but has just broken up with his girlfriend, wants her back, and conceives a sort of fake relationship with Lara Jean.
What?
This is all in the first movie, okay?
So hang on. Long story short, too late.
Yeah.
Does it turn into a real relationship?
It does! Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Now we all ship Peter Kavinsky and Lara Jean.
We stand and ship them.
We both stand and ship Sebastian.
Sorry, I forgot that.
Okay, so that was the scene at the end of the last movie. Spoilers, but it's still adorable and you should watch it.
Okay, so there they are, hard fucking, it's all happening.
No, oh my God, no. What is wrong with you?
Going at it hot and heavy.
Here's the problem. One of her letters didn't get a reply. It went to a boy in another school, John Ambrose McLaren, who's played by Jordan Fisher. He turns up this time.
No.
Now, I'll tell you the most fun to watch this movie, the most fun way to watch this movie
is
every
to not
time.
Watch this movie.
No, it's really, it's adorable.
Okay.
It is
an
adorable
film.
Every time that John Ambrose and Lara Jean are together, what's really fun is to shout homewrecker and hussy at the screen.
But like, who are you shouting at, him or her?
Both of them. He's a homewrecker, she's a hussy.
Oh my God.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
And what about baby Mark Ruffalo?
I know. Who's thinking about baby Mark Ruffalo? That's what I want to know.
He's just, he's little, he's only small and green.
What
and,
will happen?
Yeah, what will happen?
What will happen? I'm not going to say. Anyway.
Well, I do know that they filmed the third one, so. It's cool. Not too many rom-coms have sequels. So this is cool.
This is all based on a hit series of books. So, you know, if you want the spoilers, they're out there. But yeah, it's not quite as adorable as the first film, but this is still pretty adorable. And just an absolutely gorgeous, lovely little cast.
So Noah Centineo is baby Mark Ruffalo. Who's Lana Condor? Who's she baby what? She's baby...
She's kind of, I don't know, baby Constance Wu, I guess, is the most obvious. But she's... Again, just adorable and fantastic in this role. Really, really fantastic.
Okay. Sounds like you'd go more than what we gave it.
No, I mean, I think three is fine. It's not a film with pretensions of being, you know, deep and thoughtful and great. It's
very much a three-star week.
It is a bit of a three-star week.
This, of course, is on Netflix. You cannot go see this film at the multiplex. You have to see this film and, of course, the first one. You can binge-watch films now. I guess you can binge-watch both these movies and catch up with the adventures of Baby Hulk. Which I understand, that's what it's about, Helen. That's what I took away from it.
Baby Maybe
Hulk.
They could be like a multi-generational Columbo.
Oh, my
mind has just been blown.
Wait a second. Baby Columbo.
Baby Columbo. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just one more thing. The case of the missing dummy.
He'll
solve a case for you. Muppet baby. Muppet Columbo. Anyway, yes, to all the boys, P.S. I Love You is out now on Netflix and we gave it 3 stars. And that is it for this week's Empire Podcast. Join us next week for more film-related fun when we will be joined by Elizabeth Moss, star of The Invisible Man, and Richard Stanley, director of Color Out of Space.
Whoa.
The ill-fated, of course, Island of Dr. Moreau, Hardware, and he's a really interesting director. Mm-hmm. And that interview is going to be conducted very late in the day next Friday, by the way, which means that next week's podcast might be up a little later than usual because then we'll have to edit the interview and then drop it into the show. So it might take a little while. He's not coming in here until about 5 o'clock or so on Friday, but... Schedules is as schedules does, as Forrest Gump once said, and we have to work with that because the film's out next week. The film is out next week. And what I meant to say about the Dublin show, because we're recording it on the evening of the 6th, which is the Friday, March 6th, that won't be up until at least the Saturday, but more likely the Sunday, the 8th. But don't worry.
Oh my gosh.
We got your back, and we're going to try and put up some special... non-spoiler special content for you to fill the void, so to speak. Okay, so we got you.
I guess.
We got you. But anyway, until next week, until then, until that auspicious occasion, it is goodbye from Amon Warman.
Peace.
It is goodbye from Helen O'Hara.
Toodaloo.
And it's goodbye from me. You know, if you have one takeaway from this week's Empire Podcast, it's this. Don't take a fucking takeaway into the pod booth. Now I have to fumigate this place, quite frankly. But hey-ho, this is the cross we bear.
Surely if you have one takeaway from this week's podcast, it should be that takeaway. We should have had that takeaway.
We should have had the takeaway.
Damn it.
Helen, this is a life we lead, the life we chose.
And there is only one guarantee.
At my command, unleash hell. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Bye.